The RTHK English News Service brings you the latest news throughout the day right here on your radio, our homepage, Facebook and the RTHK News app. And now we're on Instagram. Up-to-date news, videos, feature stories and podcasts all at your fingertips. Search RTHK English News and follow us right now. Catching up with the very latest local and international news just got even easier. On your radio, our homepage, Facebook, the app, and now Instagram. RTHK English News.
Now here's Nori Mir with this week's Lion Rockers.
Good morning and welcome to Lion Rockers with me, Noreen Mir. In this series, I get the chance to sit down with some of the movers and shakers of our city to talk about Hong Kong, their life story, and what the Lion Rock spirit means to them. If this is your first time tuning into Lion Rockers, then welcome. And if you're a regular listener, then thank you for your support for the show. This week, I'm really delighted to be chatting with Ajmal Samuel. He really is such an inspirational thought leader through and through. Born and raised in Pakistan, Ajmal endured a life-changing accident which left him as a paraplegic. In spite of this, he began training and found a new focus in sports, and he even began to represent Hong Kong on a national level too. In this episode of Lion Rockers, Ajmal talks about what the Lion Rock spirit means to him and how he uses it to motivate himself. Here, he starts with his childhood.
I'm originally from Pakistan, and I was born in a city called Karachi, and then my parents moved to a place called Multan. So that's where I grew up, basically, went to school and all that. And that is basically because my father, which also a very interesting story here, because I come from a very strong Christian family, which is from Pakistan, which doesn't happen very often, but yeah, that's the case. And yeah, so I grew up in Multan, and I went to a very well-known school, La Salle. I think there's a La Salle around here as well. So I went to La Salle in Multan, and that's where I did my high school. And then I wanted to get into the armed forces because we used to live in the cantonment area. And I used to, every morning I used to get up and see all these tanks and aircrafts passing by our house and all that. So it's like a young kid. It's like, wow, I wanted to be a pilot, basically. I wanted to be a fighter pilot. And I did apply for becoming a fighter pilot, but that time my eyesight wasn't good. So they told me, okay, why don't you go to the armed forces? They don't need absolute eyesight. And that's how I joined the armed forces. And my plan, I had a very set plan. I was going to join the armed forces. I was going to get my commission. And then I was going to join the aviation corps, hopefully, and then become a pilot and then see what happens, how things go from there. That was my plan. But obviously, the best plan, things don't go as they are planned. So, and I had my accident. And that's how things turned and everything changed. Yeah.
You sent me a picture of the photo of the accident. Take us back to 1987.
I was doing my first course, first weapons course. I'd already done my... So what happens is when you graduate as a young lieutenant, you're basically immediately thrown, because in the military academy, you graduate as a general in general military studies and all of that. So you're not really specializing in any specific area. So once you go and get your commission, you have a specific corps or armed corps where you are either signals or infantry or armored corps or whatever, which is assigned to you, that now that's your corps, this is your career in this corps. So I was given corps signals, which is telecommunications. So I started doing my courses, and the first course was my technology signals course, they call it, the basic signals course. The second course was infantry course and weapons course. And that was in Kotli. Kotli is in Azad Kashmir, up in the Himalayas, in the mountains. Yeah. So that's what I was doing. And I was doing quite okay, quite well, actually. I was very good at bayonet fighting. So that is all part of the infantry course, yeah.
What's that then?
You have a bayonet.
Oh.
And they still teach you as in infantry because you have to, it could be, although now I'm talking 80s, yeah, now it's all modern warfare. But that time, even I think now the soldiers or the army officers, they're trained to do hand-to-hand combat.
So for coordination and
no, it's proper bayonet, bayonet fighting, fighting with bayonets and all of that. Yeah, so it's it's an art form. Actually, I have to say it's an art form. It's not really. It's like karate, judo, and whatever. So it's an art form. So I was very good at that, and of course handling different weapons and all that. So that's part of the weapon course. So I had already finished the weapon course, and I was waiting for my graduation. And there was Eid. Eid was coming up. And during the Eid time, everybody was going down to Rawalpindi. And I also, we had a group of officers who said, look, let's go down to Rawalpindi because we have 3 days off or 2 days, something like that. And then we rented a van. Actually, it was if I remember correctly, it was a van from the from my school, from the infantry school. So we planned to go down to Rawalpindi. But what happened was that that guy, the driver was doing multiple runs to Rawalpindi, and he was going up and down, up and down, up and down. So when our turn came, I think he was very tired. And just outside Kotli, he lost his control, and the car itself, together with all of us inside, fell into a ravine in the Himalayas. I'm not talking about Hong Kong ravines or whatever. I'm talking about Himalayas, which is serious fall. So when the dust settled, the car hit the ground in the ravine, and that is the time. Actually, there were a few officers who were injured, but not major injuries, just minor gashes and all that. And the driver, he tried to leave the vehicle. He tried to open the door, but the vehicle was all crumbled. So he got stuck, caught in between the vehicle and the rocks and all that. So he was one of the casualties. And I was sitting right in the back, and I came out of the, I still remember I walked out, but my spine suddenly broke, and it was fractured, and I collapsed, and that was the end of my walking. So basically my spine, I can be very gory about it, but I won't be, people are listening on this, but my spine broke, and it came out of my skin. It punctured my skin. And it just came out. And so I was...
Were you in a lot of pain?
Yeah, I was in a lot of pain. I was in extreme pain, not a lot of pain. I had never experienced that sort of pain in my whole life, to the point that when they evacuated me...
Because the nerves and... Yeah, yes.
When they evacuated me, luckily, in the front, the medical front post, there was the doctor was a friend of mine. It didn't just turned out that he was a friend of mine. And he is the one who brought me back in ambulance to Rawalpindi, the main hospital. And he was giving me morphine jabs throughout the whole. And after a while, he told me, I can't give you any more morphine because I've given you the maximum dosage. I have to stop.
And after that, the road to recovery was very long. I read that you went to the UK for your surgery.
Right.
What happened in between that and so, why the decision to go to the UK?
So the doctors in the military hospital, they were finding it very difficult because we're talking about the 80s, yeah? Even that time, even generally, globally, the spinal repair was not that advanced. So even in Pakistan, in the military hospital, it was really, they were very, very reluctant because they were afraid, because it's all dealing with the nerves. They were afraid that if they do a surgery, they go in, it might cause some other problems. So eventually what ended up happening, I was in the hospital for almost 2 months and my bone set.
Oh, it fused back.
No, it set with my spine coming out. It set. So I was like, my bone healed in a wrong way. It was in like this. So the spine coming out, and then it healed there. And to the point I couldn't even lie down because...
It was sticking out.
Sticking out. So they had to make a hole in the mattress. They had to make a hole so that I could lie down and I could lie flat because otherwise I couldn't. I had to be on my side. It was an interesting experience for me that first couple of months. Then I went to UK. My parents arranged for me to go to UK, and that's where basically they opened me up and they did they removed all the broken bones, and I had a lot of grafts from my hip bones. They took a lot of bone from my hip bones and then made, until today, I have it in my, they put titanium rods in my spine. So I still have, I asked my doctors, should I take them out? Are you good? He said, no, pointless. Just leave them there. It's okay. And it's been, I don't know, 36 years, 35 years. I've had those titanium rods.
Incredible.
Yeah. So that's how, so actually UK was a godsend for me because I was in a rehab hospital. And that's where I learned how to basically live my life independently again. And that was just, actually, that was the beginning of a long journey for me. Because also what happened was that because of this accident, because of spinal injury, I developed chronic pain. And the chronic pain was worse than my spinal injury. Because I would be sitting, talking to people, and I would pass out. The pain was so intense. And eventually, I was seeing a lot of pain specialists and all that. They put me on a whole lot of morphine and actually a cocktail of different medication. And what happens is when you have this surgery very fresh, it is physical and it is mental and emotional, everything put together because you're going through a lot of trauma. So the painkillers were okay because they were helping not only my physical part, but my whole person. My whole person, they were helping that okay. The whole trauma for mentally and emotionally and physically, they're all taking care of it. So initially it was okay. I could feel that, okay, I'm pain-free now, or at least, although just for a short time and the pain would come back. And then I had to take pain medication. But then, yeah, this is another part of my life, which was very interesting because when I came to Hong Kong also, I started seeing the pain clinic in Queen Mary, and they also put me on a whole lot of medication, even more than what the doctors in UK had put me on. And eventually in 2001, I conscientiously myself decided that I'm not going to take any more pain medication.
Just cold turkey.
Yeah, I just stopped everything, cold turkey. And it was a very interesting experience because my doctors in Queen Mary told me that if you stop, because I was taking huge quantities of morphine. If you stop, it's like blood in your body. You can have a...
That withdrawal symptoms.
Withdrawal is one thing. I could have a stroke or I could have a serious heart attack or something because suddenly my body would... such a huge dosage would go away. It was like part of my body. But I did a lot of research and eventually came up with that people who go through these problems... they find that endorphins are a good replacement for morphine. I've started having serious medical problems because of all the medication. So I used to do a lot of that, and then eventually I gave up the medication, and yeah, the withdrawal symptoms were bad. It took me almost a month to get over all of that. And then, by the way, this is at the same time that I was CEO for CityLine. So it's, and many people in, even at work, never knew what I was going through in my, this particular aspect of my life. They just thought Ajmal is having another phase in life that he's taking on sports. But it's not just I've taken on sports, it's the reason I had taken on sports. And that was because of my withdrawal and my getting off the medication.
Yeah. Take us back to how did you join CityLine then in the end?
Yeah, so when I came to Hong Kong in 1992, I think so, I thought, well, by the way, before I came to Hong Kong, I was living in Germany and I almost got my German nationality. But I came to Hong Kong and I fell in love with Hong Kong. I said, I'm not going back to Europe. I didn't like Europe to start with. Nothing wrong with Europe, but it's just being in a wheelchair in Europe is just not a good thing. So when I came here, I thought, wow, cool place, very dynamic place. I'll be able to look for a job and find a job. I did my computer sciences in Germany, and I was ex-army officer. I had telecommunications background and all that. This should be okay, but not known to me. It was one of the worst decisions at that time for me because I started applying for jobs. It's not an exaggeration that I sent thousands of CVs, thousands. And by the way, I used to get interviews, but many times I have had this experience. I go for the interview and they look at me and they wouldn't even open the door. I've gone through this whole thing, and they will just say, go away. We are not even going to talk to you. Because this is the time long before there was any concept of some platform for disabled people or disability rights or whatever. There was no concept in Hong Kong at that time. And that's what I had to go through. And I still remember one time I was interviewed by one of the biggest telcos in Hong Kong. And the guys who were interviewing me, after the interview, they told me, Ajmal, we love you. You exactly fit the profile. But unfortunately, we can't offer you a job because our workplace is not set up for you at all. Nobody will be able to work with you because they don't know how to deal with a guy in a wheelchair. So I'm sorry, we can't offer you a job.
That's insane. Yeah. How is dealing with somebody who's not in a wheelchair different to dealing with somebody in a wheelchair?
No, but that was in the early 90s. That's the way
the
they thought. That was the mindset. And so, okay, no problem. So eventually I ended up working. The first company that offered me a job was a local, very local company to be a technician, computer technician. And that's what I took it up because I thought, at least I get a foot in the workplace here and I become employed and get into the whole workforce. And I think that was the right decision to do because after 1 year I was promoted running one of the departments there. And then I think within a few years I got headhunted by a Silicon Valley company. And I worked with them for a while, and then a friend of mine introduced me to this mainland, actually Chinese big family office. They had very big businesses in China, and they still own a lot of businesses in Hong Kong. And he asked me to talk to them, and I went and they offered me, basically the workforce that time when I was working, I think it would be easily 10,000 people working for that particular family. So I was just one small little guy working in that family. And eventually I was based in Hong Kong and Guangzhou. I used to commute practically every day on a train. At that time, there used to be a morning train going from Hong Kong to Guangzhou. I used to take the train and then come back in the evening. Sometimes they gave me an apartment in Guangzhou, so I sometimes stay there. But basically, I was working on a project related to some automated meter reading, which another technology thing. And after a few, I think 1 or 2 years later, something like that, I was one day approached by one of the senior guys from the group. They asked me that the big boss, the owner, wants to see you. So, okay. I don't even know, though. I know the owner, but I'm nobody in this whole group. And then eventually I had a lunch with him, and there's a long story. I won't go into details with that, but I left a bit of an impression on that guy. And me together with another Norwegian guy, in also working, we were both offered a job to come and fix a company in Hong Kong, one of his companies called CityLine. And apparently CityLine wasn't doing very well. They had never made money, and they used to be a big brand. You go to U.S. cinemas, you see CityLine.
CityLine for U.A.
Yeah,
cinemas.
Right, yeah. You used to see that logo and all that, but it was never really a successful... People thought it was a successful company, but it from a revenue point of view, it was never successful because it was a successful brand. People knew about it. Everybody knew about it, but it never made money. So I was asked, hey, this is your company. You guys, both of you, which one of you is going to take up to either fix it or shut it down? So we had a long discussion. The Norwegian friend of mine, he didn't want to take it. And he's... Because actually both of us thought this is a death sentence because if we take it, if we can't... Nobody wanted to take it. So eventually he said, okay, I'll take it. And then I went in and luckily I received a lot of good mentorship. I had a very good mentorship within that group. There were a few guys, especially one particular guy, a Canadian guy who really mentored me very well how to put this all together. So eventually I was able to actually... do some major projects in Hong Kong, including Hong Kong Disneyland's whole ticketing system, Erptix, for people who know Erptix, I'm the one who took from the old legacy system, built the new systems in CityLine. And then the whole UA Cinema. UA was a brand owned by the same family also. So whole UA Cinema is the complete platform technology. So just redo the whole thing. Yeah, and many, many more projects working with the family. Yeah, that's how my story about how I got into the CityLine and how I made my name.
How your life has changed from your accident to going to a similar but very different field to what you imagined. Now, the guests who come on the program are Lion Rockers, and Ajmal, you've definitely got that Lion Rock spirit, that Hong Kong spirit.
Yeah, you know, that's right. I believe that into spirit. Hong Kong spirit, yeah. And this is a spirit where basically, if you really want to do something, you can. Actually, I sometimes compare Hong Kong with the old United States of America. So people used to go there to do something into that whole American dream, okay? So from my point of view, I think Hong Kong dream is a much powerful dream than the American dream. That's my own, because maybe I'm biased because it's my own personal experience, but really, I have proven it that a Hong Kong dream, you can do anything. If you really get your head around it, if you really want to do, and of course, it's a place where you need to work very hard. And once you work very hard, you can achieve whatever you want to achieve. And I think I have gone through the journey in Hong Kong.
Now, Ajmal, you are incredible because you are a really amazing athlete. So apart from, you know, what you do in technology, what are your hobbies? What do you do for fun?
For fun, I make sure I burn a lot of carbs. So I've actually, this is a very, my life to me even, it's sometimes strange. I can tell you very, very frankly, for me myself, I find it very weird sometimes what is happening with my life, because every day there's something new, crazy thing which is going on. For example, when it comes to sports, I started with pushing my chair on Boyne Road. And then eventually I did a lot of research. I said, I want to get a hand cycle. Hand bike, yeah. So I got a hand bike, and then I started training. And you won't believe, I used to start from. I used to live on Bonham Road, and from Bonham Road going all the way up to Stubbs Road, Wong Nai Chum Gap Road, and then
so steep.
Yeah, and then go down to Aberdeen, and then climb up Pok Fu Lam Road all the way up to back home to Bonham Road. Yeah. So once I was doing that, I got to a point. I attained a certain level of fitness. And then I said, okay, what do I do next? And that is when I got my racing wheelchair. And I especially went out and I saved money and I bought a racing wheelchair. And I started training. And racing wheelchair is typically used in marathons or is used in anything which is equivalent to running. And then I discovered that even before marathons, there was no triathlons in Hong Kong for disabled people. So I approached the Hong Kong Tri and then I talked to them. And then I became a member of Hong Kong Tri, and everybody used to find it very completely out of this world. Why do you want to do triathlons? And I had to show them that, okay, there are other people around the world also doing who are disabled like me, but they are doing these type of activities. And then eventually Hong Kong Tri actually created a separate category for, and I became the first chair for the committee for the disabled part of the Hong Kong Tri. And so that's how my role in the regulatory part of the sport started. And then I wanted to join marathons in Hong Kong and other places also. So I was doing marathon in other countries. I used to go to, especially Ironmans and half Ironman, not full Ironman, half Ironman. I used to do a lot in Singapore. I used to go to Singapore and I used to do a lot of half Ironmans. And I became, actually to the point I was number one in Asia at one point in time in my category. And then I thought, well, I need to do Standard Chartered Marathon. And of course, when I wrote to them, they all like, oh, there is no category. What are you talking about? Go away. Da, 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 da.
So and finally, you managed to lobby them.
Yeah, I lobbied and I got
2009.
Yeah, that's right. Eventually, amazing. I took part, and not only me, we got athletes from all over the world who took part in all of that. And to the point that till today, there's a special category for disabled people who take part in Standard Chartered Marathon. So it opened up. So that was my contribution to the Aung San Suu Kyi Marathon.
Amongst many as well. Can we quickly talk about the ATMs? What you did with the ATMs in Hong Kong?
So actually, it was a little bit of a personal project, because which became into a very major thing. That when I came to Hong Kong, after I got my first job in Pacific Rim Systems, of course, the guys asked me to open an HSBC account. And I was the office is in Wan Chai, so I went to the Wan Chai branch, which has stairs. But and eventually, some friends helped me, and we went up and opened the account. And then the salary started coming in. And I was like, okay, I want to draw money. Where do I go to draw money? Oh, so every ATM you go, there are steps. Especially HSBC has separate ATMs, and they all have steps. And that's where my thing with HSBC started. So I started writing to them, and there was no response from them initially. And then I started writing to SCMP, and I wrote a lot to SCMP. And eventually HSBC did respond, and they, after almost a year, they said, look, we understand you approached us, we understand you've been writing the newspaper, and what we have been doing is we have not been sitting idle, we have come up with a new strategy, global strategy, which basically allows, makes sure that all our branches will be accessible.
Wow, okay. I got goosebumps.
So I didn't realize that it was going to have such a big impact. You know, I was just,
I want to take my money out
of it. But eventually, that's what happened. So now you go to not only ATMs, you go to any HSBC branch, you will see there's a ramp going up. Wherever. So that is apparently there is something to do with all my
lobbying
with HSBC. Yeah, so that was my HSBC story with the ATMs. Yeah.
Ajmal, you are an incredible person, an incredible guest. Let's end the program on a song that's of significance to you. What can you share with our listeners today?
Look, there's a song which I used to, was my favorite when I was a small kid and even before my accident. And it became a little bit more poignant for me after my accident. And it's a song called I Have a Dream from ABBA.
Yeah, well, Ajmal, thank you so much for your time today. I really, really enjoyed hearing your story and talking to you today. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much for having me on the program.
I have a dream, a song to sing, to help me cope. If you see the wonder of a fairy tale, you can take the future, even if you fail. I believe in angels, something good in destination makes it worth the while.